This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Matt said, is he? Oh, he's here.
Yeah.
He's here.
So I'll remember.
I didn't even see
him. Call, if you're listening, everybody else, there's other aspects to it that I feel like we just got to be real with ourselves about. We got to be real. So we'll talk about it.
What's up, Matt?
No, I'm here early because I think calling LaMelo Ball a superstar is ridiculously absurd.
Oh, man. Wow. He's talking about your mama.
And here's the thing. I just did a podcast today on whether or not the Sacramento Kings should go and trade for LaMelo Ball. I like LaMelo Ball as a player tremendously.
Has that podcast dropped yet?
Yes.
So go listen to the Locked On Kings podcast at 4 o'clock or 7 o'clock if you like hip hop. But are you in on the idea or no?
I think LaMelo Ball checks the three major boxes for what the Sacramento Kings could potentially be looking for: a young star to build around, a talent that helps them still compete immediately, and a point guard. Like he checks all three of those boxes. So that doesn't mean that it's going to work out. That doesn't mean that it's a safe bet by any means. In fact, the podcast is my conversation with our Locked On Hornets host, Doug Branson. And he makes sure to emphasize, like, it is a risk for what it's going to take to even convince Charlotte to move on from him. He's a guy that has been riddled with ankle injuries his entire career, and he's never shown an ability to win. Not that that's his fault. He's been drafted into one of the worst organizations on the planet, and that is coming from someone who covers the Sacramento Kings. Like the Hornets have been terrible. They haven't had a playoff win in like 20 years. So they're approaching a 10-year playoff drought, which again, coming from a Sacramento perspective, been there, done that. We know that. But LaMelo Ball has never had an opportunity to show that he can win, but you're talking about trading for and making someone your number one guy who, again, is injury riddled and has never shown that ability to win. There's the risk factor of it. So I think LaMelo makes a lot of sense for someone to be considered or in the conversation of if the Kings are trying to make a swing that also makes sense somewhat long term. I think LaMelo absolutely is in that conversation.
Going back to what he said about LaMelo being ridiculous that he's a superstar, I think there's different criteria there, and because you're great at something doesn't make you a superstar. I think there's like a Zion Williamson. You guys think he's box office? He's a superstar?
No. Zion was a superstar at Duke. Zion was a superstar at Duke. He hasn't been a superstar in the NBA.
So to your criteria, and I guess everybody's criteria is different, it's just about winning.
No, at this point, there's not a lot of people paying, like, I think that are prioritizing Zion as a box office.
Might be wrong.
I'm talking about in general, Matt. Is it to be a superstar, it's just about winning?
I think winning and accolades are the primary caveat to being a superstar. Is you have to be backed by the actual results. You need the results to be a superstar. Like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a billion times a superstar compared to LaMelo Ball because he's an MVP. And I don't care if he's Tim Duncan-esque boring and he's not flashy and popular on social media. I don't care. I'm watching the dude leading a team to the NBA finals, and I think the Thunder are going to be champions. Like I'm seeing it. Doesn't matter if he's not flashy or on commercials. Like I don't care.
I just think that, well, okay. And that's your criteria, but I just think those are two different conversations. Like I said, like when you talk about, like people say the word superstar, do they know what a super, Janet Jackson's a superstar. Mm-hmm. Like these are the most notable people in the history of music when we say superstar. Same thing in basketball. The most notable people in the history of the game, in the current history of the game. That to me, that's a superstar. And you don't just throw that around because somebody is winning games and they're great at what they do.
So LaMelo Ball is one of the most notable people in the NBA, players in the NBA?
Do you don't think he is?
No.
Okay.
I think he's been irrelevant for the majority of his career. And again, it's kind of the product of his environment, plus the fact that you don't know if he's playing half the time.
Okay.
And I wouldn't hate LaMelo on the Sacramento Kings, by the way. I believe he can be a star and a leader, but he hasn't done anything yet. So why would he be in the same tier or conversation as Steph Curry and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Jason Tatum? He's not. It's not even close.
You're talking, once again, it's two different conversations. You're talking about...
No, they're superstars.
You're talking about winning accolades and all this other stuff. I'm talking about if somebody's got... If Reese or anybody else has... $70 to spend on a shoe. Are they getting LaMelo's or are they getting SGA's? To your criteria, they should get SGA because SGA is more of a winner and he's done our same thing with Jokic. And I'm telling you, Reese would go get those Pumas because LaMelo's got them.
So what your shoe sales and what happens in the business world matters absolutely more than what you do on a court.
I did not say more.
Okay,
but
neutral corners. We tried to lay out the criteria here for a second.
That doesn't make sense.
Okay. Well, but listen, we tried to lay out what we thought would the criteria would be, or maybe this is Kenny's criteria, but I actually think that it works. Accolades. Box office, or do people want to come see you? You know, highlights, you know, how you kind of hit the algorithm of basketball fans, so to speak, and marketability. Can you check all of those boxes? And I think a lot of this was born because, you know, SGA and Tyrese, those conversations are kind of being had right now where SGA obviously has these accolades. Tyrese is really starting to stack these accolades. He's starting to stack moments, too. He's starting to stack highlights, which is something that I didn't think he'd be able to do. But he's having, in my opinion, a postseason for the ages right now. And you start going, well, how many of these boxes can you check? With LaMelo, there's probably only one you can't check. I'd probably push back on the LaMelo box office thing, but still you're checking at least two of the four boxes, and it's just how many of these, you know, how much weight carries over into forming what you believe is a superstar from these different categories that you're pulling from.
Charlotte, bottom of the league in attendance, by the way. Like, your own fans aren't coming to see you because your team sucks and you're not playing half the time.
So my
issue is not with Tyrese and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's conversation because they're both playing in what's probably going to be the NBA Finals. They're here.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
My issue is with LaMelo Ball because he's popular with kids on TikTok. Like that's what makes him a superstar. 2025. Okay. Like
well, that, it that does matter.
Like it's,
it,
but
yeah,
but
social Matt's, media but matters, Matt, but that doesn't determine what you do on the floor. You're a basketball player first, not a social media star.
So time out. Mm-hmm. Okay, you're good, right? Like we've got time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fine.
Okay. So Matt jumped in with us early. We're gonna talk. Well, I'm not. I'm just gonna sit here and shut the hell up, and I'm gonna let these two talk. Now we'll break. We'll break, Jesse, and then we're gonna come back and we're gonna go for a while with Matt before we send him off to work. So it's D'Lo and KC. Matt George is with us here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320. You think the conversation stopped during the commercial break? No, it did not. Y'all might as well just keep going.
No, my whole thing.
This literally went on the entire break.
My whole thing is. Matt has his criteria for what a superstar is, and I don't want to put words in your mouth or anything, Matt. You can speak for yourself, but it seems to be only basketball related. That's a superstar. And if that's your criteria, that's your criteria. I'm not here to change your criteria. I'm telling you, with my criteria, there are other things that go into being a superstar, which, when we started this whole thing off, says, I don't think there's a lot of superstars in this league. I think you can count them on one hand. And that's all.
And LaMelo Ball is one of them.
I never said he is a superstar. I said you got to consider him. When somebody said LaMelo, I was like, he's got a lot. But I also said the one criteria that weighs the most, in my opinion, the winning, he doesn't have that. He's got all the other criterias to me, but the most important one he don't have.
Well, this will be a fun conversation to play back when the Kings trade for him. I'll say this. LaMelo, like, what I will never be able to accept is LaMelo Ball being on the same tier as actual legitimate superstars in this league that are that have shoe sales, that have jersey sales, and that win titles and have MVP awards and lead statistical categories and change the game.
But that's the whole point. The people you call in super, let's just say I'm not calling LaMelo a superstar.
Then we're good.
But you're calling people that I don't think are superstars, superstars. I think there might be four.
So you don't think, so Steph Curry, superstar, yeah?
Superstar. LeBron James,
so you don't think SGA, who just won an MVP award, and if he wins an NBA Finals, well, I mean, we can revisit it too. But you don't think SGA is a superstar?
I'll answer your question. I think he is a superstar. I think he is. But part of that, which you just don't seem to even reconcile, is he's got a social media component to it. Like, league fits matters. That's what damn near got him that AT&T commercial.
Mm.
So that matters. That's why he's a superstar.
I'm not saying it
doesn't. Or one of the reasons why.
I'm not saying it doesn't matter. I'm saying if we're putting a percentage on it, it's like 75%. What you actually do on the floor, and I put like social media marketability at like 15%.
Okay,
it doesn't matter. It's like bottom of the level.
You've changed it because you said you don't care about that stuff.
I don't personally care about marketability because I don't care that Bryce Harper has a luscious hair for men shampoo commercial. Like,
that's
I don't
a superstar
care.
Too, by the way.
I don't care. Like me personally, I don't care. I know it matters, but to me, it I don't care. Like, I don't buy shoes because of the person. And this is just me personally. I don't buy shoes because of the name on it. I buy shoes because, one, they're comfortable. Two, they fit a brand that I like. And three, they match suits or outfits that I wear. Like, that's why I like the look of them. But it's not because I would never buy a pair of LaMelo Ball shoes just for LaMelo Ball. I would buy them if I liked them and they fit. And I've actually never seen a pair of LaMelo Ball shoes, to be 100% honest with you. Like, that part of the world is not for me. That doesn't mean that I'm right and everybody else is wrong. I'm just saying that matters way less than what you do on the floor as an actual basketball player. Your profession and the stage that you're on, how you perform there, matters more to me and should matter more to the game than how popular you are on TikTok with 15-year-olds. So that's just me.
I feel like you keep saying that and you're doing it in a way that diminishes what social media is. But I think there is a component that we haven't discussed yet that is very important to all of this, especially when it comes to more the likes of SGA and Tyrese, because it does fall a little bit more into the winning category. We could talk about Matt's preferences. Mm-hmm. We could talk about Kenny Caraway's preferences. What does Adam Silver and the National Basketball Association think? Mm-hmm. Who are they putting on their commercials? Who are they putting on Christmas Day? Who are they putting on MLK Day? Who are they highlighting with their nationally televised games? Mm-hmm. That's where you don't have to ask questions about the likes of Steph Curry at 37, the likes of LeBron James at 40 years old, and the likes of Victor Wembanyama already. Like, we see it. He is out there. Those guys are definitive superstars in this league. But then you look around, and it's how often is Minnesota playing on television? What will the Indiana Pacers look like in terms of a nationally televised component? New York is always difficult to tell because a lot of what you're featuring, not to knock the team, I think this is a great basketball team, but a lot of what you're featuring is the Garden. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what has been featured is that front row at the Garden that somehow is transferred over to Indiana as well and has created compelling broadcasts for, you know, the camera crew and the production to catch the actor's name who we never remember. Right there in the front row, and then there's Spike. Looking. It's not Charlemagne. You keep saying it's not
Chalamet. Timothy
Chalamet.
It's not Char. No R. That's right.
catching Spike's dejected reaction. Pat McAfee calling out Ben Stiller. Pat McAfee doing the big introduction. Like there's elements that the NBA can they really buy into. And you know, if we made that a different box or we threw it into box office or marketability, LaMelo's probably not checking that box. There's probably a lot of guys mm-hmm. that aren't checking their box. And this goes back to the whole this is the whole impetus of this conversation was, you know, is Tyrese, you know, like can we really say that SGA is, how many superstars are there in the league? And this further lays out, there just are not very many. It's why Steph is still on TV 30, 40 some odd, 50 some odd times a year. It's why LeBron James will play every Christmas until he decides he doesn't want to play basketball anymore. Mm-hmm. It's why the San Antonio Spurs and Victor Wembanyama are going to be on TV. It's why Caitlin Clark is constantly on television. It's why Caitlin Clark versus Angel Reese will be on ABC every opportunity that the WNBA gets.
Mm-hmm. Channel 10.
There it is. There it is. Okay. And that's just another component to all of this.
Indirectly, you made a point of,
and thank you. I try, thank God.
I try not to. My criteria is how I see my criteria. I'm not here to say nobody else's criteria matters or doesn't matter or anything else like that. That's just the way I look at it. But Chalamet is a perfect example. Do you think I care about Doom or any of the movies that he's in? I don't even know who he is. Does that mean he's not a superstar? He's a superstar.
Yeah, no,
right?
He absolutely
He's absolutely a superstar.
Sure,
because there is certain people and a demographic of people who, if he's in a movie, they're going to see it. Or if he is doing something, they tapped into it. Like that, and that's when Matt says, I don't care what the kids do. Well, that's a demographic of people who look at LaMelo or even SGA or Trae Young or something like that and be like, yo, if they're doing it, I'm tapped in. And just because I'm not tapped in or I'm not tripping off Chalamet doesn't make him not a superstar.
Does LaMelo check your boxes, though?
He checks all of them but winning.
He does not check box office, though, because like Matt said, Charlotte Hornet tickets are cheap as hell over there, and like no one's paying more to come see the Hornets here. He doesn't have a top 10 selling jersey either. He's got the shoes. Like, I'll give you the shoes and all that, but he don't have accolades or wins either.
What would be really interesting to see, and I was looking this up while guys were talking, like before the conversation too, Jesse, is like road attendance, because the NBA typically attracts road attendance, and what Charlotte Hornets road attendance would be. I looked up on the two places that I looked up on did not track road attendance for it, and usually ESPN is the most reliable for that. Mm-hmm. But Charlotte is home attendance wise bottom of the league. Again, I don't put that on LaMelo. I put that on that organization being horrible. But that's an interesting way to track it too, because if road fans are coming to see you or people in other cities are coming to see you, I think that's a big part of what Kenny's saying too, which I do agree is a thing.
Do we think John Moran is a superstar?
Yeah.
I'd say yes.
Yeah, he is. I say he is.
Matthew?
I would say he's there or in that conversation much more than LaMelo Ball is.
I think he could be fading a little bit.
Could be fading.
I think a lot of that
don't last forever.
Well, I don't think it's. I think some of that is his own.
He had the eighth highest selling jersey this year.
There's another tier above superstars that maybe like that, like Steph Curry, LeBron James shouldn't be in the conversation because we're talking icons, like we're talking through timeless.
You know
right?
What name we haven't mentioned? Luka's a superstar, right?
Yes.
Yes.
1,000%.
But he's not an icon yet. But he's
not yet.
Yeah.
Right.
He's absolutely a superstar.
I think, when I was thinking about it, like when I'm determining my criteria, basketball is a competition. So I put the most weight into the spirit of the competition. And the biggest issue that I have with labeling certain players superstars is putting them on the same tier as some of their peers. So that will always be most important to me. It's, do you have the accolades? Do you have the on-court success to put yourself on the same level as your peers? There are probably players that are better than LaMelo Ball that do not have the following that LaMelo Ball has on social media. That's really, really good for him, or that supports him. But if I'm putting LaMelo Ball on a basketball tier with some of these guys that are actually, like, if I put him on the same basketball tier as Tyrese Halliburton, it's not even close. And that to me is what's most important when basketball is a game. It is a competition. These guys are competing against each other. Like when there are winners and there are losers in basketball. Mm-hmm. So that's where I put, like, Are you winning? Are you succeeding at the level of those peers? If not, then I have a hard time putting you in the same count. And this is not just a LaMelo Ball thing. It's like why to me, John Morant is fading. Yes, he's done some of it to himself, but John Morant has been to the playoffs a handful of times and gotten knocked down a peg a number of times now and has never really gotten there. Like, if Ant continues on this trajectory and keeps losing in the Western Conference Finals, like, that's going to – I think Ant is phenomenal and marketable, and his personality is phenomenal. But if he starts – if he keeps getting knocked down and knocked down and knocked down and it doesn't work in Minnesota, like, that it hurts his legacy, I suppose.
I just think those are two different conversations sometimes. Because I've never – like, I'm not – we're talking about LaMelo and – like, he ain't on an NBA tier of success – on the same as Tyrese or any SGA. He's not that. But for me, superstar is all-encompassing. It's not just wins and losses. So that's just – but that's just me.
Was DeMarcus a superstar?
No. Part of it had to do – he was here in Sacramento. And
boy, he got close in New Orleans.
He got close in Sacramento. Like, he was an all-star recognized mm-hmm. on this franchise.
Mm-hmm. He got close. I didn't think he was, though. I didn't think he was. I think he was close.
He was pretty
close. I think he
close.
Hurt himself, too. With
well, just, and that's right, sure.
Mm-hmm. I think he hurt, yeah.
Yeah, that's certainly the other thing. Is watching Tyrese difficult for you? Do you enjoy it?
It's impossible not to watch Tyrese without purple-tinted glasses. And when, not if, when he makes the NBA Finals, there will be a podcast episode dropping where I have a very honest, candid conversation about, like, the Kings didn't just lose the trade now. Like, they got destroyed. It's unfortunate because for so long I was champion of what I had the biggest issue with right away, and I still have an issue with it today, was people looking at the trade and talking about the Sacramento Kings getting fleeced and how dumb the Sacramento Kings are, and people talking like the way Tyrese is playing now was in the cards. Some people might, like, revisionist history is everything, but people, like, before our very eyes, we're seeing Tyrese Halliburton bud into a superstar, and conversations like we're having here on the air are happening all over the freaking country. So we can't be having these conversations all over the country and then saying, yeah, we knew all along from the moment the Kings traded Tyrese Halliburton that this was going to happen. I think that aspect of it is absurd. But the Kings lost the trade when they gave up. Like, the Kings lost the trade when they decided to blow up what they had, and they further lost the trade when they watched the Indiana Pacers invest and build upon what they had, and the Kings refused to do that. So it's impossible not to look at the Tyrese Halliburton trade when watching him succeed. Doesn't mean I'm not enjoying it. There is absolutely a petty part of me that is rooting hard for OKC and was rooting for the Knicks in this series because I didn't want to swallow that pill, for lack of a better term. But Tyrese Halliburton is better and has had more success and is budding into a superstar more than any player the Sacramento Kings have had since Chris Webber was here. How can we not feel a certain type of way about that? So it's reality. It sucks. It's just another thing for Kings to kind of live through. And to some, it's worse than the Luka thing because Tyrese was actually here. So I can say it kind of with a smile at this point. It sucks, but I'm happy for him. And I mean, watching him, the performance he had in game 4 was unbelievable. Mm. And even the biggest of haters have to go, oh my God, that was a legendary, iconic type performance. Doesn't make him an icon. One game doesn't make you. But that's the kind of performance you're like, I can see you being a Hall of Famer and one of the best players in this league.
You know, Tyrese has obviously been spectacular throughout the whole playoffs, and his style of play is so much fun to watch. I try to just enjoy that as a basketball player, as him, not really worry about the Kings aspect of it, because, like I've said before, it's not a, what would you say, probably a one-to-one comparison. It's not, if Tyrese stayed, the Kings would be exactly where the Pacers are. That's not, nobody knows
right.
that.
Yeah, right, right.
You know
right,
what I'm
right.
saying? So
well, there's right. a lot of reasons to believe it wouldn't be the case.
Right. Go right. No, but that's, if I knew that was the case, even with Luka, if I knew, you know, if Luka's here, for sure we would have been in the NBA Finals.
Well, four conference finals appearances between those two.
I mean, like
staring at two NBA Finals appearances, but hey, it's cool, man.
I'd be like, yeah, that's terrible that we just gave that away, but there's so many different things that come into play with it. And one of the things that we talked about yesterday is it might have came down to one general manager was willing to do what it had to take to go get a Pascal Siakam, and one wasn't.
Mm.
And that could be.
If you're just tuning in, Matt, this. Kenny really hates Monty McNair now. Like, he came in.
Oh, no, I heard earlier.
Don't hate him. He was just awful. It's just awful.
He got a license plate that says F. Monty McNair on it. You can see it out there in the parking lot.
He got off to a rough start and then had a really, really, really good like year and a half. And then it completely fell apart. Like people forget his start. And I know you actually too didn't have as big of a problem with this as I did. But his first major decision other than extending De'Aaron Fox, which, I mean, didn't matter. Everybody was going to do that, no matter who you hired. His first major decision was letting Bogdan Bogdanovic walk. And I remember feeling at the time, not because it was like, oh my God, Bogey's this amazing player, but I had the perspective of this is Sacramento. How do you let a player walk? In the end, it didn't really mean much. It didn't really mean anything. But I remember feeling that type of way. And then that first kind of year that he was here, he made like super minor, kind of mild.
Hassan Whiteside and Glenn Robinson III.
Little dog.
These little things that you're just like, okay. But I felt that what he did, the trade for the Tyrese Haliburton trade is going to end up being a negative mark on his resume as a general manager, and we'll stick with him to the end of time. A note of context that is important here is that while I'm not saying that he would have 1,000% chosen to trade De'Aaron over Tyrese, it is well known and understood that Tyrese's value on the trade market is significantly better and significantly different than De'Aaron Fox's is because of their contract and the longevity, right? Like De'Aaron Fox was a way better player than Tyrese Haliburton was at the time, but you don't just trade for the player, you trade for the contract and you trade for control. And in a team like the Indiana Pacers, who by trading DeMontis Sabonis were launching some sort of soft rebuild, Tyrese's contract and age is a lot more appealing than De'Aaron Fox's is. That's important context to have. I think that what McNair did took guts. I think McNair did something that the Kings had been trying to do for a long time, which is find a center to play with De'Aaron Fox, and it worked, right? Like that context is important. It worked. The Atlanta Hawks trade for Kevin Huerter has a negative connotation to it now because we dragged out that stupid draft pick.
Yeah.
But that trade worked. Signing Malik Monk, which was broken here on D'Lo and KC, worked. Right? He did good things over the course of a year and a half. He got this franchise off the ground for the first time since Jeff Petrie. Vlade wasn't able to do that, and we don't even need to bring up Pete. The problem was, as soon as he got a couple feet off the ground, he was like flapping his wings like a broken winged bird, just trying to hover or trying to, and it fell apart there, which you got to get off the ground and then you got to continue to rise. And that's where he fell apart.
But at what point, like, what constitutes something working? Like, it worked. They got to the playoffs. Okay. But then what?
I Sacramento perspective, I do think, is important.
Because to me, nothing worked.
Yeah, I kind of hear what Matt's saying. I think different.
Oh, I hear it too. I just don't agree with it. Mm. Nothing. Like it's like the hindsight that you were talking about. In fact, Matt, you just said this. The Tyrese stuff stings for you a little bit more because the Kings just blew everything up. You talked about how the Kings have definitively lost the trade because, well, De'Aaron's gone. You've kind of blown things up. Everything you were trying to build, you've already given up on. The Pacers had a plan, executed it. Even if it was a rebuild, you said it might have been a soft rebuild. It was the softest rebuild in history because they went right out and got Pascal Siakam a couple of months later. And then,
right,
you know, maybe they were a little better than they expected. Maybe they saw, hey, man, we only need to make a few small minor adjustments and able were to you know, kind of get off and get going. But when you look at the fact, I'll use the same words you did. once you blew this up, to me, nothing worked. Mm-hmm. Kevin Huerter trade was a massive failure. Unless the goal was just to end the drought.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
And I remember someone saying, 16 can't become 17.
Yeah, you had to end it.
So maybe the parameters, much like the superstar conversation, are just different.
Yeah.
If the parameters were just to end the drought, salute Monty McNair, you can have a statue because you did it.
Well,
but if the parameters were building
a statue at the pyramid building somewhere, where?
Fine. Put it on top of the rabbit in the air.
Well, good. Then I'll never look at the stupid thing. I can just ignore it like I do every time I fly into Sacramento. But to me, none of it worked. Because you're not starting completely over right now, but you are trying to figure things out this offseason, which is getting stopped every day, having conversations on this show every day. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? Is it DeMar? Listening to DeMar on a podcast this morning. What's going to happen with Domas? Is Keon back? Does Keegan get extended? These are all questions we shouldn't have if everything worked.
Yeah.
But it didn't. So we do.
Yeah, I hear that. It's like short-term, long-term goals, right? I think part of making it work is your first step. And the first step to me was establishing a solid foundation. And I felt that Monty actually did that for the first time in 20 years.
Mm.
I felt he built a foundation where you could build sustainable success on top of it. Then he completely tripped on his own feet and completely fell off of it, or decided, if we're using construction terms, like decided to wait on ordering new parts or the next tools or things that you needed. Can you tell I don't build anything to build the next layer on top of it, or to build on top of that foundation? Like, Monty was able to build a foundation in Sacramento that we have not seen in two decades. But you got to build on top of the foundation, right? So what worked was him establishing a true legitimate foundation to where we all saw that there was something there. And there was room to improve, right? New contract for Sabonis. I know De'Aaron's contract was coming up, but if the Kings make it to the second round, maybe the contract conversation never happens. Or if you extend Mike Brown right away, I don't know. Whatever, revisionist history. Like, you had this foundation, and we all looked at the Kings and said, this can be the start of something. And then it never was. And then not only did they not build upon it, then they took a sledgehammer to the foundation and are now on mud again. Like, that was the problem. So in the grand scheme of things, you're right, D'Lo, it did not work. But I felt that Monty built a foundation that has not been here in Sacramento for 20 years. Give him a gold star while he sits on his couch for the rest of the year.
I also give him credit for the Sabonis trade. People say he lost it or whatever. I thought at the time, he did what he felt he needed to do. And Sabonis was a good fit with what they were trying to do here in Sacramento. So, I mean, I'm not going to argue with anybody and say you lost the trade. That would be crazy. But I don't really get into, like, the wins and losses stuff, because there is context.
The wins and losses of a trade.
Of a trade. Because there's
Kings were up in the first moves. Half. Kings were up in the first half, by the way. They had a 10-point lead at
half.
Well,
God, if that's not the story of the Sacramento Kings right there.
20, then they lost
20.
By 40.
They were up 20.
Does Monty not building off the Domas deal kind of make it a bad one?
Yes. 100%. That's the difference. That's potentially. I don't know. That's potentially what the biggest difference between the Pacers and the Sacramento Kings. The Pacers built, the Sacramento Kings did not.
Yeah, because, like, Domas was great here and all that stuff, but, like, it never amounted to anything. It was just a one-off trade.
It's Bonte Hill is empty calories.
We have the benefit of revisionist history, but I'm just talking about,
of course,
Monty's,
we do.
If Monty makes the trade for Pascal Siakam, we don't even have to speculate what happens that season. Like, they probably make the play. Who cares? Like, I don't know. Like, we can never say that. But Pascal lives up to his threat, or his camp's threat of he's not going to.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Resign here. And you traded Keegan Murray for a flyer at Pascal. And the answer is probably it depends how well the playoffs went that year. But let's say all we know is that they traded for Pascal that year. Monty tried to add on to it, and then they lost Pascal in free agency while also losing Keegan in the deal or whatever. Do we feel better about Monty now, or in this hypothetical timeline, do we feel better about Monty now because he tried something else?
And the end result is essentially the same?
I guess.
No, we're bitching about something else.
Sure.
However, I will say this. I will say this, though. All right, bitch, leave. Go ahead. Oh, you're telling me you're going to take $40 million less because you... Hey, go ahead, dog. Do your thing. Here's the contract offer. You're walking away from it because you want to go play in Indiana. Hey, salute. Go ahead. Because remember, it is a lot harder to sign a player that is not yours. We talk about the maximum amount of money that you can offer. That's one thing. Do you even have the space to offer that player that money? And how many teams out there had that space? The Pacers, they knew exactly what they were going to do. Siakam's people knew exactly what they were going to do. They were going to offer him the maximum amount of money they can offer him. He was going to take it. They were going to live happily ever after. Maybe the hangup was the Kings weren't going to offer that money. And I posed the question at the time, are you comfortable with the Sacramento Kings, or would you have been comfortable if the Sacramento Kings had offered, what was it, $200 million? I can't remember the exact amount.
I think, yeah.
200 and some change, maybe, to Pascal Siakam to be here for the next 4 or 5 years or whatever the number is. Yeah. Most people said no. Now, of course, we see where this is going, but that's the other part of this. It's not just Siakam.
Right.
It's Aaron Nesmith. It's everything that they did this last offseason. Right. It's Rick Carlisle. It's staying committed to what you do well while trying to improve the things that you don't.
Facts.
Not the whole becoming something that you're not.
Right.
Go ahead, man.
The homer in me as a Kings fan, too, and as a Sacramentan, too, is like, I think Sacramento would have won Pascal over, too. Especially if they had made the playoffs that year and Pascal got to experience a Game 3 or Game 4, probably would have been Game 1 or Game 2, but a Game 3 or Game 4 environment. Hell, maybe they would have gone on some streak and hosted another Game 1, Game 2. Like, Sacramento's won a lot of players over. So, that is an NBA timeline to mentally explore while we're laying in bed staring at the ceiling at 11 p.m.
And then you talk about that. You don't have a guy in that position that's savvy enough to think that way. You know what I mean? Like what you just said, what you just laid out, like, go ahead, leave. That's something a savvy general manager would do. Call his bluff. And if you don't call his bluff, or if he goes and actually leaves, all right, we'll move on, we'll pivot, we'll do what we need to do. But they're not going to be scared off by somebody saying, we're not going to re-sign here. Not going to do that. The other aspect, the thing that really kills me the most about Monty McNair in his time here and why it's ended up being so disastrous is he's had, what, 5 drafts, and we've got essentially nothing to show for it. I'm not trying to disrespect Keegan Murray. He's cool.
Too late.
He's cool, but we don't have no franchise. We have the 4th pick in the draft. We ain't got no franchise player. So you have 5 drafts. I think you made 4 picks. One, in that Herter trade, you traded away one of the picks. Like, there was nothing to fall back on, and that's the killer to me. That's the killer. There is, Matt talks, you know, the last few weeks about being hopeless. There's nobody here to be hopeful about. I'm not even saying like this guy is great, and I know we've had to talk and stuff about it, but let's just say, for instance, Shaedon Sharpe was here now that we've seen him play.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everything that's gone on, all right, well, Shaedon's 22. He's averaging 17. Maybe he might turn into, you know, a premier. Like, we don't even have that because you picked, I don't want to say the wrong guy, but you didn't pick that type of player.
Mm-hmm.
These drafts is what pisses me off the most.
Man, there's a laundry list of things that piss you off about this individual today, boy. My goodness.
Two things I want to say to that, Casey. Number one, this is coming from the biggest Keegan Murray supporter on the planet. Ask this question, everybody, ask yourself this question. If Keegan Murray exploded and suddenly became a 18, 19 point scorer, would we all be surprised? The answer is yes.
I would, yeah.
Which means Kenny's point is correct. If Keegan is going to become that, what you're talking about, it's going to surprise the entire league, which means it's probably not a safe bet. It can still happen, but it's probably not a safe bet, which is what you're hoping to try. You're trying to get as safe a bet as possible with the fourth overall pick, right? Number two, going back to what you said about calling bluffs, that's where I have the most confidence in Scott Perry. One, I mean, his connections, I think, are extremely important. But being in a room with Scott Perry, granted, it's your introductory press conference. You're just starting a new job, so it's you're not feet to the fire yet. But I feel a lot better about this, and I got this feeling from Scott that I never got from the other three general managers that I've covered. There is a sly confidence and smile to where if he were sitting across the table from Rich Paul during the De'Aaron Fox thing, and Rich Paul is saying, we only going to San Antonio, blah, blah, blah. We don't want the, whatever. Rich Paul is doing his Rich Paul thing. There's a part of me that believes that Scott Perry would do the little side grin, just go, bet. Like, all right. Okay. That doesn't mean he's going to like try and call every single bluff that's put his way. But there's a confidence about Scott Perry that comes with experience and comes with knowing the game.
Well, the problem with that is, though, it's not just Scott Perry. You have to... who has to call his bluff. It's the general manager. It's Rafael Stone. It's the general manager of the Orlando Magic. It's the general manager of whatever team you're trading him to. They too have to go, no, it's cool. We'll try it for a year. If it doesn't work for you, all good. But we're going to do it. Right. Yeah. If you want to turn down the millions, salute, but we've got to do this.
Right.
My point is, and I don't mean this as any kind of attack towards Monty, I think it's pretty well understood that the last 6 months, Monty just rolled over, right? Like, he whether it was demanded by Vivek to fire Mike.
He's like me today. He's like me today. He knew he was going on vacation. He's just like, hey, let me get through this. Let me get through my last day of work, man. I'm going to Palm Springs or wherever Monty McNair goes.
I don't think Scott Perry will ever do that. That does not mean that Scott won't still have his issues. But like, if Vivek, because it's an important point of conversation, I think Scott and Vivek will work closely together. They have to. And I believe Scott Perry will include Vivek in decision-making because he's the owner. But I have more confidence in Scott Perry looking Vivek in the eye and going, we're not doing that, than anybody else who has been in this building to this point with him. And hopefully that's proven right. Yeah. Or if Vivek, it doesn't even have to be Vivek. It could be literally any other general manager. Daryl Morey calls him up trying to make a trade for Tyrese Maxey and is being stupid. Danny Ainge does his Danny Ainge thing in a Utah Jazz trade. I have more confidence in Scott Perry laughing and hanging up the phone than anybody else on that the Kings have had over the last decade or whatever.
They won't get punked. And I'm sorry, I'm lighting Monty's ass up today. But the one time he stood his ground and said, no, there ain't nothing there.
It's fine.
He's not even...
It's fine. It's fine.
Sorry, I was editing.
No, don't worry about it. You're
fine.
Good. Go back.
Hey, ref was focused on this part of the field.
even Matt was like, hey, but go ahead.
The one time Monty, I shouldn't say the one time, but just for dramatic effect, the one time he stood his ground and said, no, I'm not doing this, is when it was time to have a damn press conference, and that ruined everything.
Well, maybe not ruined everything, but it ruined a whole lot more.
He sure stood his ground on the Devin Carter pick too, from what I know.
Oh, good job.
I have a pretty good understanding that if there was unity between Mike Brown and Vivek Ranadive, it was not being too excited about a Devin Carter pick. And Monty he got there okay. Like, there's no way he doesn't do it without at least Vivek's blessing. But from what I've been told and what I understand is Monty had a more optimistic view and very analytics driven optimistic view of the Devin Carter pick than anybody else did. And I wish Devin all the best.
I haven't fully
basketball
quit
people
on,
making basketball decisions, boy.
That's I haven't fully given up on Devin. I was very encouraged. We talked about it before by what I saw the last 20 games or so.
It's not Devin's
fault.
I
didn't think he had that in him. And in the last 20 games, I like that. The rookie doing some good things. So I haven't completely quit on him. And maybe Monty will end up being proven right in who he thinks Devin Carter is in this league. But he could have picked somebody else.
Where Devin Carter was drafted and Devin requiring surgery because of a basketball injury is not Devin Carter's fault. What is Devin Carter's fault is like what kind of James was talking about earlier, the stuff about like the diet and the personality or whatever, like that. Now you as a player, you got to do your job too. And hopefully Devin will, he's going into his second asterisk kind of first and a half years in the league and his first real training camp. Knock on wood, he doesn't get hurt and he's going to get his first real training camp. So there's not a decision has not been made on Devin Carter, but a decision has been made on Monty McNair's selection of Devin Carter being bad.
Can't imagine. But wow, Mike Brown's not excited for a player who's not going to play for him for 6 months.
Imagine how De'Aaron felt. De'Aaron's going through an offseason. Like, think about this. De'Aaron's going through an offseason where he had to fight to get Mike Brown an extension. And De'Aaron goes into another season and they draft another point guard after Tyrese Halliburton was drafted. Davion Mitchell was drafted. Like, I'll just flat out say it. De'Aaron told me when I talked to him about this, De'Aaron told me he was looking around going, man, they really must not want me here because they drafted another point guard. He told me that to my face. So
this guy ruined everything.
That Devin Carter pick was rough.
He's the biggest culprit. He ruined everything. Matt, you don't have to answer this because I want everybody at 4 o'clock or 7 o'clock, like my man said, to go check out the Locked On Kings podcast. I'm going to check it out. So if it gives too much away, just say listen to the podcast. But what do you think the realistic chances of LaMelo being available is?
I don't mind saying this. Doug Branson, again, host of Locked On Hornets, brings it up on his own because we were talking about like a pathway of making this happen, and we were trying to figure out like what would the Hornets be interested in? Mm-hmm. Like, you have to make them an offer that kind of they can't refuse. Mm-hmm. Kind of the same thing that you might have to do in a John Morant or Tyrese Maxey or whatever kind of conversation. And Charlotte would prioritize, because they're not anywhere close to competing right now with or without LaMelo Ball, unfortunately. Like, they're going to prioritize draft compensation. If there's one thing you have in abundance now freed up, it's draft compensation. So there is a very legitimate route, at least according to Locked On Hornets host Doug Branson, there is a very legitimate route for the Kings to be in these conversations, whether it's LaMelo or any of these guys. They have the draft compensation to make it a conversation. Now they have to figure out the money-wise to get it over the finish line, and that might end up being the hang-up because the Kings have like a canyon of contracts. And what I mean by that is like, hey, Keegan has $11 million. Hey, Malik Monk has $18 million. And then there's DeMar at 24 and then nobody else under 40. Like, that's a canyon of salary that you have to try and figure out how to move or how to you can't. There's not a lot of Tetris blocks there to make it work. So that might be the hangup. But the Kings have draft compensation in abundance to make any conversation for any star happen. Because like we've seen in the Mikal Bridges or Rudy Gobert trades or any of these trades, draft picks talk. And Sacramento Kings' own draft picks really talk. Mm-hmm. Because as history will show, those things are valuable unless the Kings are using them to make a selection.
Man, great stuff, Matt. We have to let you go to work, man. Thanks for spending the last hour with us. This was a really fun conversation. Some
Matt
really
is
great
a superstar.
Stuff. Oh, easy. No. Easy.
How many shoes does he sell?
Well, he's got to work on that. He hasn't checked that box.
He's checked all the boxes, but the shoe sales.
Yep. No, and the social media is a travesty.
It's popular on social media.
The jump shot's terrible. It's all bad.
But
it's
he wins.
Well,
he wins,
no.
though.
Monty like, McNair would have selected me with a draft pick. That's how that.
Oh, man. Well, that also means you're old. So.
Well, that's true. I'm 31 now. So.
Well, God, you're right in the Monty McNair range.
Let me sneak this in really quick. D'Lo and KC, game one of the NBA Finals post game. And if it happens, game five of the NBA Finals post game on ABC 10. We won't do seven this
Thank
time.
Thank you. We'll I appreciate that. Yeah,
better,
yeah, yeah. Thank
it's
you.
A better shot.
Thank you for that.
It's going to be hilarious when it's a sweep.
2 years in a row, baby.
Great stuff from our buddy Matt George, man.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.